morning, church. Good to see everybody this morning. Three things before we get started. This is a sign-up sheet. If you're visiting with us, we have Children's Church. When I get up here, so the kids aren't bored to death, they go downstairs and they get to worship in ways that they actually understand and can be taught. And so every year we pass this around. And this year we're really only asking. We made some changes to church, and so we really only need two volunteers per week. So if there's anybody in here who wants to sign up for all 52, that'd be great. I don't think you are, but if you want to do that, we are asking that if your kids go down to Children's Church, that you take a couple of Sundays, that you do take two. So that is something that we are asking. But and if you're a grandparent, we ask that you take eight. I'm gonna start with Miss Carol over here, but she'll sign it and we'll just go that way. And when it gets to the back, we'll go ahead. No, I'm kidding. but we'll just and some of you may just you may need to get your schedule. You may not know. So if you want to get your schedule and look at it, and then if you think I'll won't see your name and won't come back. So if you don't sign, I just assume you're gonna look at your schedule and get back to me. And so I'll just, if I don't see your name, I'll just assume you're going to do that, and then I'll come find you and ask if you've had a chance to look at your schedule, seriously. If you've got time, if you can see that, and I also know about schedules, and mine is usually out until, I think right now, somebody asked about October, and I said I can't. So I understand schedules are tough, so if you will look at that, and we're going to pass it around next week. We're going to pass it around until all the spots are filled. So they're also passing it with our brothers and sisters down the hall, and so they've got a volunteer every week that they've got to put in there. So if you will, just do that. I told you there's three things before we get started. Today I want to talk to you about what people see. Here's the second thing. You cannot change who you are. You can't change. I know some of us believe that people can change. At the end of the day, you can change how you look. You can change maybe how you talk, or you can change how you feel, but you can't change who you are. If you were born a Caucasian male, you a Caucasian male. If you were born with your body a certain way, we may be able to change how the body looks, but it's still how we were born, and our bodies still want to do that. I think it's important to say that because in our culture and society, what we teach here in the West is that if you don't like something, you can just change it. And that's pretty true, except for the fact that you can't. We are who we are, and if you're like me, I get frustrated sometimes because I think, I'm just the same as I was when I was 12 years old. Guess what? We all are. At some point, we all are who we were born to be. And the reason I have to say that is because of this last and third thing. If you can't change who you are, what that also means is that you can't stop people from forming an opinion about you. You can't stop it. On one level, when Brooks read that passage from 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 11 and 12, and we'll just be in verse 12. I'll tell you some other scriptures, but that one text is extremely important for how we think of ourselves and how we think of what others think. Brooks read, "Don't let others look down on you because of your youth." Paul knew that there's nothing Timothy can do about being young. I don't know how old Timothy is. I think Timothy's about 35 to 45. So I don't know if that's young to y'all, but that was young to them. He can't do anything about that. He can't just magically say, "You know what, but I feel old. But I'm old in how I think." If you're young, you're young. If you're a man, you're a man. If you're a woman, you're a woman. If you're white, you're white. If you're Hispanic, you're Hispanic. You can't do anything about who you are. You can't change it. And so I think what Paul wants Timothy to do is to think about who he is, but not let other people look down on him. In order to do that, Timothy's going to have to think about the kind of things that he says and does. Now, I told you that you can't change who you are and you can't stop the way people think about you. Now, you might disagree with that, but you really can't. And let me kind of give you an example. Sometimes I struggle with You know, how do I use current examples? And sometimes I get to church and I ain't got nothing. I mean, I got a sermon, but it's boring because I ain't got no way to really kind of show you what I mean. And I'm waiting for the Spirit to, you know, have some spark to show me. Hey, sometimes I'm in the back just, you know, waiting. All right, Lord, any time now, any day. I ain't got no, we're just going to go right in. I'm going to put him right to sleep. This morning, you know, I didn't know how I was going to explain this, and then magically the Lord sent it to me. There are a lot of people here who have been so gracious to me, and they either write me a birthday card. I think there's four of us here who share the same birthday. Not same year, but the same day. And there'll be some people, I'll get in my office and open my door, and there'll be this card, you know, underneath. And I'll open it up, and it'll be the sweetest card. And not even, it's like in July, you know, my birthday's in October. It'll be July, and it'll just say, you know, hey, just wanted to write you a card and tell you how much we appreciate you and we love you. And I think, wow, you know, who are they talking about? You know, no way they're talking about me. Or, you know, you're so kind. And I think, really? You know, I didn't know I was putting that off. I thought I was kind of a jerk half the time. But they're saying it. They saw it somewhere. They thought I was a nice guy. I mean, I put those cards, you know, on my table, or I'll hang them up, you know, so I can kind of be reminded, you know, hey, you are a good guy, even if you think, you know, you're not. I didn't do anything to make those people think that. But then this morning, you know, I got here and I got, you know, and somebody put something underneath my door. And I thought, cool, all right, just what I needed. But it wasn't one of those. It was one of these, arrogant, condescending, and insensitive kind of deals. And I would thank the person who gave it to me, except they didn't put their name on it. So I don't know who it is. Here's the deal. You can't stop anybody from thinking or forming an opinion about you. Let me tell you why I showed you this. One, it's because they didn't put their name on it, so it's fair game. Two, I didn't do anything. I didn't try to get someone to write me a nice card. And I didn't try to get someone to think that I'm insensitive or arrogant or whatever the other one was. I didn't try to do it. It just happened. It doesn't mean they're wrong. It doesn't mean they're right. It doesn't mean they're right. It just means you can't stop it. You can't. Maybe you're still not convinced. Maybe you think it's just me. How about this? What if we had a guest speaker this morning? Hang with me, all right? We have a guest speaker. I think I got moving so fast I didn't even push my slides. Jaheim may have to help, unless it's all stuck. I just like that one because it put me in a better mood. Hit the next one, Jaheim. You can't stop people. People, you see their faces, you see their fingers, or how about her? You know? She's forming a judgment about you. Maybe it's about what you're wearing. Maybe it's about how you're talking. Maybe it's about what you're saying. We don't know what it is, but I know some of y'all have seen these faces before, and they're not just from your parents or children or grandparents. They're from people you know. Maybe you didn't see the face. Maybe it came out in a letter, in one of those anonymous letters. Maybe it came out that way. What if we had a guest speaker this morning, and he came in, and you saw the Camry that he was driving, and on the back of his car, you saw that bumper sticker. Have you formed an opinion about this person yet? Have you made some decisions in your head about this person? Some of you are shaking no. Don't shake so fast. Have you already in your mind made, I didn't say you think he's a bad person, or she's a bad person. We just assume it was a he. I didn't say he or she was a bad person. But haven't in your mind you've already decided a couple of things about this person without even thinking about it? Or how about this? What if someone came in as a guest speaker today and he spoke really well, not as good as me. Remember, I'm arrogant. And he guest spoke, and then he went outside, and before he got in his car, he put on one of these hats. Have you formed an opinion about this person yet? And here's the kicker. There are some people who form this kind of opinion about this hat, and then there are some of us who will form this kind of opinion. I'm not lying, am I? So not only can you not control the fact that people will form an opinion, you can't control what they will form. Any and everything you do will be a tool for someone to form an opinion about you. And when Paul says, don't let people look down on you because of your age, I don't think he's saying, hey, when they see you, you know, maybe try to dye your hair gray or something, so maybe they won't know that you're so young, or maybe you should get married and have some kids, and so maybe they'll think that you're older. I contacted the church when I was 20 years old and asked to come preach, and they said, are you married? I said, yes. I said, do you have any children? I said, no. They said, call us when you have kids. No kidding. Like, no kidding. So we had some kids, and I got hired. Like, it worked out great. I mean, really, it worked out great. But you just can't stop people from having an opinion. I don't think Paul thinks that Timothy can stop it, but here's what I think Paul wants to do. Paul wants Timothy to give others tools to form that opinion. What you give people is important. And this morning, Paul tells Timothy that there are five things that you need to concentrate on and think about and pass along. And if you'll think about these big five, you'll give people so many tools that they will form an opinion about you. You can't stop them. So if you can't stop them, we might as well work on what we're going to give them. So this morning, I want to share with you those five. It's important. And I will tell you from the beginning that these five are not all, I do not do these perfectly. There are a couple that I am, if I pass the exam, it's with a 65. Like, it's not good. So it's not just you and Timothy, it's all of us. And all five of them have to be worked on. The first, Paul says, is your speech. Church, everything you say matters. Everything that you say matters. All of it. How much you say matters. Proverbs 10:8 says that a chattering fool will come to ruin. A person who can't keep their mouth shut will die in poverty. Proverbs 17:28 says, even an idiot is thought to be wise if he doesn't open his mouth. Isn't that the truth? In fact, Proverbs 17:28 says, if you are known to be the town idiot, and you at least pause and don't say anything, then the people will at least think that you're thinking about it. So it's best, instead of opening your mouth, if you'll just be quiet, they'll still think you're a fool. They'll just think you're a thinking fool. It's not just how much you say that matters. It's how you say things. James 1:19 says, let a person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Remember in Ephesians 4:26, Paul says, in your anger, don't sin. Church, how you feel and what you say go hand in hand. It's not just how many words you use, it's how much or what you have behind them. I can't tell you how many times I've spoken words I shouldn't have spoken because I had so much anger or so much hurt behind them. It's how you, and it's not just the mood you're in, it's just how you say it. Or as someone told me one time, Adam, it's not your manners that bother me, it's your manner. Y'all see the difference? It's not what you said, it's how you say it. Why do you have to yell when you say it? Why do you have to look like that when you say it? We had a waiter waiting on a friend of mine. We're eating, and the waiter came over, and he just walked up, and he said, can I get you drinks? You know, no looking at me, looking around, can I get you drinks? And I said, I don't know, can you? And he said, what? And I went, what? He said, sir, I don't understand. And I said, you look mad, man. You look like somebody killed your dog. I mean, you do. You look like somebody killed your dog. Are you upset? And he said, I'm just having a bad day. I said, why are you making my day bad? And he said, I'm sorry. I said, me too. Can we start over? He said, yeah. He said, can I get your drinks? I said, you sure can. I want a water. He said, oh, you're one of those. What? Now he's being sarcastic. I said, I'm one of those. I said, but I promise you, I'll tip you enough where it was like I got the drink. He said, oh, but by the end, we're okay. Now, I can't stop the guy from having a bad day. He can't stop the bad day from happening. He can't stop me from having an opinion about him, or vice versa. But church, you can stop how you say something. You can recognize how you say something. And how you look and the tone of your voice and the volume matter. It's not just what we say, it's how we say it. Ephesians 4:29 says, "Don't let any unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment." My children would admit to everybody in here, my language ain't good. Yeah, and I ain't just talking about my grammar. There ain't no secrets in my house. The preacher's got to work on his mouth. That's not a secret. And I don't try to act as if I don't have that issue. That's just not who I am. You know? It's just not. I really try. And I really fail. I fail harder than I try. And I'm also not one of those guys that says, I guess that's just who I am. No, look, it's an issue. My kids will tell you. Don't ask them the words I use. The words I use matter. They matter. And the words that I use will cause people to make an opinion about me. And they'll cause people to make an opinion about you. We just got one. We got four more. We only got 10 minutes. We got to hustle. Paul says the second one, he says it's your conduct. Or I like the message. The message says it's your demeanor. It's your demeanor. Remember, it's like that college coach who was recruiting the high school basketball players I was telling y'all about a year ago. And he came to the game, and he wasn't watching the kid while he was playing. He was watching the kid in the huddle. He was making the most notes in the huddle. And when the kid wasn't looking his coach in the eye and walking away from the huddle, it was the child's demeanor that the recruiter was looking at, not his playing skills. Paul thinks that Timothy can go a long way if he will think about what he does when he thinks nobody's looking. Do you know that the only time Jesus ever made a personal request, like he wanted somebody to do him a solid, like this is the only time he ever made a personal request, "Could you do me a favor? This has to do with me. I want you to do it for me, not for anybody else. I need you to do this for me." The only time is in the Garden of Gethsemane. It's the only time. Now, he asked him to do some other stuff before. He told him, you know, go get the boat, go get the donkey, go do this, you know, go get the money, go, you know. He'd given orders. But in the garden, he makes a request. And when you get to the garden, Jesus is jittery. He's restless. That's what the Greek says. And the disciples can't figure it out. He's not his own self today. And he is restless. And he comes to them and he says, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow. And I need y'all to do me a favor." Remember what he asked them? "Tarry here. Stay here. Can you just stay awake and keep watch?" In a few weeks, we're going to come back to what he expected them to keep watch for. I don't think it was for the Romans. Jesus is hoping that somebody else is coming, and they never do. He asks him to keep watch, and he goes, and he prays, and he comes back, and what does he find? "I never asked y'all to do anything. I've never asked you for anything. The one time I asked you to do something, and I told you why, I was stressed. You know, an hour ago, it was like, 'Not I, not I, Rabbi. You know, if everybody can fall away.'" That's my Peter voice, right? Yeah. "Everybody can fall away, but not me. If I was Jesus, that's what I would be telling them, you know. An hour ago, we got swords, and we'll never let anything happen. And then I leave for 2 seconds, and..." You know, what you say when people's around is really impressive, but what you say when we leave, that's what causes people to form an opinion about you. You can say it all day, you can post it all day. You may think you're helping us to form an opinion about you, but it's what you do when we leave. It's what you do when you think that nobody's looking. That's your demeanor. That's your conduct. That will actually change the world. Paul says it's not just conduct, it's love. And church, love is not some emotion that you show someone. I've told you this a million times. Love is action. Love is how you treat people. And it's not just the kind of treatment that you give them, it's the kind of people that you give it to. James, in James chapter 2, he echoes his brother. He says, you know, at one point the world's going to be upside down. Right's going to be left, up's going to be down. Rich people going to be poor, and poor people going to be rich. And guess what? If you choose to only help and show goodness to those who can afford it, you're showing it to the wrong people. Who we show love to matters. The golden rule is, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And last Sunday night, the church here was looking at this statement in Luke 6, verse 35. We were looking at this. In Luke 6, 31, that's the golden rule. But in Luke 6, 35, we said this was the platinum rule. The golden rule is like the low standard. Here's the big standard. Love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting anything in return. Here's the new golden rule. Do unto others who cannot do unto you. That's the new rule. Do unto others who cannot do unto you. And I think when we do that, the world will change because their opinion about us has changed. How about this? This is number four. Paul says your faith. Faith is not just belief. Faith is not just what you think or what you believe or what you want to do. Faith really is loyalty. Can you stay loyal to God? And here's the test. Can you stay loyal to the church? Can you stay loyal? You read the Old Testament, how you stay loyal to God matters about how loyal you stay to Israel. Caught a story this week I'd never heard. On Ed Baeye's 22nd birthday, and I know many of you have heard this story before, not by me because I didn't know it. On his 22nd birthday, he jumped into a shallow end of a pool. And he broke his neck. And everybody thought that Ed was a goner. But as the days passed, they knew that Ed would survive, but this word started floating around. Quadriplegic. Ed never really thought about that word. Over the years, Ed decided that he would learn to use the only two things he could control, his head and his chin. And he would somehow learn to make a living for himself. And so he taught himself how to use the stick on his wheelchair with his chin. He called it his joystick. And he taught himself how to use another stick in his mouth and to use a computer. He could type faster than most could using the home keys. He'd just peck away at it. He used that stick. And Ed got him someone who was assigned to him, not his co-worker, but just someone who could help him, and her name was Irma. And every day, Irma would help him as he got ready and help him get ready to go out into the world. And in 1987, Ed got hired as a computer programmer for Blue Cross. And here was who said, never do anything. And he had a great job. The office of Blue Cross in New York assigned Ed to this office where he got a cubicle mate named Abe. Now, Abe's Jewish name was Abraham. Hit it up. Hit the next one, Jaheim, if you don't mind. Ed's cubicle mate was Abraham, or they just... And these two started to become friends. They started to go out 3-4 times a month. Well, actually, these two and Irma. They would all three, and they formed this great friendship. Push it up one, Jaheim, so I don't chunk this into the crowd. And here's what I like about this story. These three would go out at night, and Ed, when he would call the restaurant, he would make sure they had a kosher menu because Abraham was Jewish. And he wasn't going to eat somewhere that his friend couldn't eat. And when it was Abe's turn to go out, he would make sure that they were handicap accessible. He would make sure that Ed always felt comfortable. These two became very close friends, and they worked together in this office for years. That office was in the World Trade Center in New York. On September 11th, 2001, planes crash into their office. And Irma had left the office because she went to get some supplies and some breakfast for Ed. And these two men on the 27th floor where they worked are waiting for Irma. And Irma finally makes it back to where they are. And Irma has so much smoke in her lungs that Abe says, "You just go on ahead." And he goes to get Ed. But because Ed is in the wheelchair, there's really no good way to get down. And they can't just carry him. Ed looks to Abe and he says, Go get help." And Abe looks around, the reports say, and he says, "I'll just stay with you." And he did. And he died. They both died. And I heard that story, and I thought, why in the world would you stay? You got legs. You can move. You don't owe this man anything. You know why he stayed? Because he's loyal to his friend. You know, loyalty is real easy until the chips are down. Loyalty is real easy until I do something you don't like. Loyalty is real easy until it's your life on the line. Loyalty is really easy until I'm asking you to help me and it might mean you're going to get in trouble. That's being faithful. And church, if you and I could learn to be faithful and loyal to one another, you can be faithful to the God you can't see. That's where you learn loyalty. That's where you learn faith, right here in the church. We learn to love one another to the end, as Jesus says. Loyalty. Paul says, hey, you want to impress people? Be someone who's known to be faithful. Someone who give his life for something or for someone. Here's the last one. Purity. We throw this word around a lot. Let me tell you just what purity means. Purity just means what you don't do. Okay, that's just what you don't do. You know how you get pure water? That just don't happen. I pass a waste plant every time I go home. I tell you, it don't happen. You get pure water by purifying it, by getting everything out of it. Pure, when Paul says, "I want you to be pure," what that means is it's not just what you do that matters, it's what you choose not to do that matters. People aren't just watching the decisions you make, they're watching to see if you will not do something. They'll offer it to you and they'll want to know if you'll take or accept. And they will form their opinion based upon whether or not you chose to do it. You cannot stop people from forming an opinion. What we can do is decide that whatever we're going to do, we're going to do to build up the church. We're not going to do it for ourselves. We're not going to do it for selfish reasons. We're going to do it because we value other people. Church, I wish I could tell you that people are not forming an opinion about you or that people don't care about you, and that would just be wrong. Everybody at all times, you are on a 24-hour resume. The world's watching. Everybody watching. What you post, what you say, the pictures you put up. Everybody's going to form an opinion. And I don't think we can change that, but here's what I do think we can change. We can change what we say. We can change what we do. We can change who we do it to. And we can change why we do it. And when we change all that, I think slowly but surely, the people around us will start to see that we are the kind of people that they want to be around. Remember Jesus says, he says, it ain't the fruit, it's the tree. The fruit you bear doesn't just show what kind of stuff you do. It shows the kind of person that you are. Remember this. You can't give these people or the world all these fruits in one visit. You can't just show up at their house and say nice things and do nice things and be loyal to them. Okay, when I leave, they'll think, No. How long does it take to convince someone that you're a loyal person? Anybody got a number you want to throw out? How long do you think it'll convince? I say a week. Probably being optimistic, right? How long would it take me to convince you that you can trust me? Anybody want to throw out a number? Come on, it's all right. How long you think it'll take? 5 years. Who said, Pete, did you say that? 5 years? Jim say it's different for everybody. Pete say 5 years. I'm going with Jim, Pete. Jim, how long you think? How long you think it'd take me? Oh, no. You had to think about it? Yeah, so it may. I'm going with Jim, Pete. It didn't take Jim that long. Pete's obviously has some trouble trusting some of you. So the rest of you's ruined. And Pete knows I'm messing. You know, the rest of you've messed it up for me. You know, now Pete can't trust you. Now, but isn't that what happens? You trusted somebody. They let you down. You were loyal to somebody. They weren't loyal to you. And then I come up and I say, just trust me. Yeah, I done heard that before. Yeah. I heard that before. No, I think we're going to take our time on this one. So here's what this means. I not only have to watch what I say and watch what I do and watch how I do it and try to do the things to show you that I'm a Christian person. I got to do it all the time. Oh, no. But isn't that what true faith is? It's not just doing it one time. It's doing it all the time. Church, it matters what people see. It matters that they see it all the time. I know most of you know who Bill Walton is. It is hard to follow in your father's footsteps when your dad is 7 foot tall. He wears a size 17 shoe. And he's one of the top 50 basketball players of all time. That's debatable, but not very. Bill Walton is basketball legend. And so what do you do if you were Luke Walton, the son of legendary Bill Walton? They asked Luke one time, who's a pretty good basketball player. In fact, he played 11 years with the Los Angeles Lakers. Hey, you got to be good to play pro. I'm sorry. You go pro, you good. I'll look at NFL stars on TV and say, you stink. You're horrible. Hey, man, they play pro. They're pretty good. But that's just how we get. Luke plays for the Lakers for 10 years. And Luke, in this newspaper article, I know some of you ask, what's a newspaper, but bear with me. Luke says, he's quoted as saying, I don't think I knowingly tried to follow my dad's footsteps as a kid, but I think every kid kind of looks up to his dad and wants to do what they do. In fact, no matter where I go, I'm never referred to as Luke. What is he referred to as? Yeah, Bill's son. Yeah. Oh, there go Bill's son. Eventually, Luke got the job as the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. And when they introduced him, guess what they introduced him as? Son of legendary, but the guy just can't run from it. He just can't get away. I like what Bill says. Bill Walton said, you know, it's a hard thing when a child tries to follow in their parents' footsteps. He says, I tried to train Luke, tried to tell Luke, that the fans will always try to get under your skin. And you've got to train yourself that when they're coming after you, the reason they're coming after you, son, is because they respect you. And what the people really want to do is tear you down. What they really want to do is say, see, the apple falls far from the tree. You're not your daddy's son after all. That's what they want, son. What they want to do is to make themselves feel better by telling themselves that you're not who they think you are. Luke played 10 seasons in the NBA, became a coach, and the past 3 years when he coached the LA Lakers, in those 3 years, this guy only won 38% of his games. When the Lakers missed the playoffs this last year, guess what they did? Yeah, they let Luke go. When they hired him, it's the son of legendary Bill Walton. When they let him go, guess what his name is? Luke Walton. Yeah. So see how that go. But I found this, and I thought this was short of magic. This Los Angeles reporter asked Luke right after he gets, the same day, right after, he meets him outside as he leaves. And the Los Angeles Reporter said, at times like these, do people still compare you with your father? And Luke turned to that reporter and he said, all the time. He said, of course, times like this, they want to say I'm not my dad. But you know what? My dad taught me better. My dad taught me that if I work hard, pay attention, that if I work hard, that if I hold my head high, that if I treat people with respect, then it doesn't matter how many games I won. They'll know I'm my father's son. Church, it doesn't matter how many points you score. It don't matter you win the games. None of that stuff really matters. What really matters is what you say and what you do and how you do it. And if you work hard and if you respect others and if you hold your head high and you're nice to others and you're kind to others and why you're kind to others and if you're kind to others all the time. Church, those are the things that matter. So instead of using your words to tell that joke that we really wish you wouldn't tell, or instead of posting that picture that you know we're all going to talk about, or instead of replying to that email that you really, really want to reply to, let us use thoughtful words. Let us be kind to others. And let's find the people that nobody's kind to. And let's be kind to them. And then two things will happen. Your reward in heaven will be great. It'll be greater than you could ever have. And you will change the world by helping them to change what they think of you. Let's change as we stand and sing.